he had a stroke and he had to stop playing cello, but he was a saxophone player at first. Mm-hmm. And his approach to the cello was sort of in the vein of a saxophone, mm-hmm. you know, like, and then that was a beautiful blend, cello and tenor, because the cello has a very large range.
Right.
If I was playing with classical celloists, it might not have worked.
I see.
Because of the vibrato, you know, the approach to it. But
sure.
Callo, he interpreted like saxophone. He was a saxophone player at first.
Mm-hmm.
So his approach to the cello was sort of in a jazz saxophone range. So it blend beautifully together with the tenor,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a different way of approaching the music with him. So each band that I noticed that I play with or get in a part of, I changed a little bit. Not far as a sound wise or anything, but ideas.
Right. Okay. So, but the sound is not to overdo
yeah,
this.
Yeah, the sound is.
It's always Charlie Rouse. Yeah, I mean, there's no question about it's Charlie Rouse.
Yeah.
And just as we learn to identify other instrumentalists over the years, we have now yours is as identifiable as any of the others.
Yeah, thank you. But I'm fortunate enough that I came up in that era where that was everyone.
It was important.
That was important.
Yeah.
For the jazz musicians.
What happens today is that many of the younger musicians will identify with a given artist, with a Coltrane or Charlie Rouse or what have you, and they'll put a lot of emphasis on sounding
like that
individual. And we have a lot of young people who will hopefully develop their own distinctive sound.
Yeah, but they should, because that's the most important thing, your identity.
Right.
You know?
Right. Let me ask you something about the period between the 1950s. And there was one time you were with Ellington.
Yeah, I was with Duke. Well, I was, how did it happen? Yes, I was with Ellington before I joined Basie's, not the big band, but the septet.
Oh, okay.
But I think that was that was after I left Duke's band.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. You were with Duke in 1949-1950.
1949-50. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How did that come about?
Duke heard. in fact, I was working at this club upstairs, right on 17T.
Mm-hmm.
Jimmy Cobb, myself, and Tommy Potter, Tommy Motrin,
mm-hmm.
a bass player.
Bass player, right.
And Cedric Williams, a little piano player from Kansas City. And a quartet, and we were working upstairs, and some lady that knew Duke, Duke was looking for, Ben had just left the band.
Mm-hmm.
And Duke was looking for a saxophone player. And this lady spoke to Duke and said, "Here, I want you to hear this little saxophone player that's working upstairs." So Duke came in and heard, and he liked what he heard, so he asked me would I join the band.
Mm-hmm.
And quite naturally, I said, yeah.
And you were with that band how long?
I was with the band for about a year.
About a year.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And after that, we're into the 50s, after Duke's band,
Duke, what happened was I couldn't get my passport. We were out in California,
mm-hmm.
and we were supposed to fly in and go. We were supposed to sign the papers and everything out in California and give it to the manager and then send it in for the for our passports.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a little negligent at that time, so I didn't do it. And I couldn't go. I didn't have my passport.
Mm-hmm.
So when they went to Europe, they got Don Byers. Don was living over there then.
Right.
And Don did the tour with them. And then when they came back, that's when Paul Gonzalez joined the band.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. In the same place that you had been in before they left.
Uh-huh. When I was there, with Jimmy. Jimmy Forrest was in the band.
I see. Uh-huh. During that period between the 50s, you had done some recording with Clifford Brown?
Yes, yes. Clifford, myself, Gigi Grice. See, I forget who was in the rhythm section. But I did, yeah.
Did y'all do several record dates?
No, it was one album, one record date.
I saw somewhere, read somewhere that during the 40s or late, early 50s, that you had worked with Louis Jordan's band.
Yeah, the 1045.
Which is kind of interesting because we had kind of categorized you as having like 100% history of bebop.
Yeah, well,
Louis Jordan had good bands, though.
Yeah, he had good bands, but it was of a different context at all. I think that was a money venture for me, because I was singing.
Yes, indeed. I was going to ask you about your singing.
My vocal career.
Yeah. So that was during that period, during the
With the band. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, he used to sing "The Green Grass Go Around and Around." You know, he used to have the band do backup.
Yeah.
You know. But not only him. I was with.
Eddie Clean Evans?
Yeah, well, Eddie was they kind of associate Eddie closely with Louis Jordan, but sort of in that vein, because Eddie was singing the blues and Louis Jordan was singing the blues,
mm-hmm,
you know.
Mm-hmm.
But Eddie Vincent was really a jazz alto
guy,
he could really play.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it was a really different feeling with Eddie.
Right.
Eddie, I could play and I'm relaxed, and Eddie sings the blues and whatever, and we play, you know, and when he play, I'd say, yeah, you know, because at that particular time, that was the time that he showed me he wrote the composition of Four,
mm-hmm,
and Bee-ba-doo-ba-wee.
Tune-up. Right.
Those are Eddie tunes.
Mm-hmm.
But
Miles Davis gets credit.
He gets credit for it, but those were Eddie tunes.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that with Jordan, it was more of a commercial thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just did a lot of background music. He would let me maybe once in a while take a solo 12-bar thing.
You still playing bebop?
Yeah, I was in bebop, but I took a sabbatical. I went a little absent on that. But then I was in another real blues a group. It was a guitar player. I forget his name now. Two guitars, and me. We played Philadelphia a lot of times. And this was really a blues man. It was type of band. It had a backbeat drummer.
Yeah.
So it was the type of band. Those really really blues band. It locks you in.
Yeah.
You got to play a certain way. Otherwise, if you start running, you're wrong.
Okay, well, that was a kind of a different period in
yeah,
North
well, that's
Korea.
Was time New York.
Yeah.
See, I'm living in New York,
right,
and I'm freelancing, I'm working.
Was Coltrane at that time with
no,
with
Train
that kind
was,
of band?
No, Train. Well, Train was coming up, he was working. Train was with, trumpet player from Chicago? Philly Joe was with him too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What's his name? Coach. Gee, I know his name just as well. But they were. He wasn't as famous as Louis Jordan. But they were all in. You know.
Yeah, doing a kind of Morris. I'm trying to think of his name from Chicago. I know you're talking.
You know who I'm talking.
Yeah,
trumpet player.
Yeah. I wanted to say Joe Morris.
No, it wasn't Joe Morris.
Not Joe Morris, but.
But yeah, well, we all
same kind of band,
same,
like
yeah,
a rhythm and blues,
blues
band.
Yeah. Well, we, you know, our thing and our hearts were in the modern jazz.
Right.
But living in New York and working, see, at the particular time when the music is moving, I mean, was changing at that particular time, it was hard to get in work usually a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like just only a few they would let work.
Right.
Along, you know, but otherwise, they would you would have to go different places and
mm-hmm.
work, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll talk just a minute about your work with Monk, and that is, how did you get into his harmonic approach? I mean, did you study with him for a while, or how did you get involved with his harmonic?
When I first arrived in New York, I played a couple of gigs with Monk, just maybe one night, because Monk didn't have any band at the time. We were just, you know, maybe up to Renaissance. Thelonious had a gig or something, he'll call me or say, I met him and we were friends. He said, Ross, you got to, you know, you work in Friday or something. Mm-hmm. So that was my first encounter with Thelonious, working with Thelonious. And then all the years went, the years that I'm saying, like Eddie Vincent and Eddie Vincent, Cleanhead, Louis Jordan, and all those other groups that I was with. I had known Thelonious, but I wasn't working, you know, he was working sparsely too, you know, because they wouldn't let him work there for a long while because of the cabaret card and stuff. So, but what happened, then Thelonious, they were beginning to let Thelonious, ease into the door, sort of. Uh-huh. And he formed a band. And first, Train was working with him at the Five Spot. Thelonious stayed at the Five Spot, the old Five Spot, for years. Uh-huh. Then after Train, Sonny worked with him. Sonny worked with him first, and then Train started working with him until before Train went with Miles. Uh-huh. And then Griffin worked with him. Uh-huh. And then when Griffin went to Europe, I saw Sonny on the streets. And he was telling me that, he said, well, Thelonious is looking for you, or looking for a tenor player, you know, wants you. So what happened, I got in touch with him. Uh-huh. And we got together and we started playing a little bit. I used to go at his house. In fact, all the musicians used to go on 63rd Street, used to go and play with Thelonious. Because every musician loved to play with him because he brings out the best in you.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And everybody used to go around. It's Sonny and Dizzy and all of them. Mm-hmm. So, prior to joining Thelonious Band, I used to practice with him. We used to practice over at the Nika's house, the Baroness house. Mm-hmm. We'd go to Jersey and practice all night long. He'll learn me a tune and he'd say, Rouse, play, you know, he'll learn it to me. And then he'd get off the piano and walk and go do different places. And I'm in a corner playing it, learning it.
And when you say learning it, are you dealing with melody melody and harmony?
I'm dealing with melody and harmony.
Okay.
You did, because he's off the piano now. Mm-hmm. He just showed me the melody and stuff and showing me where it lies, you know, where the harmony and different things.
Right.
Too. So what I'm doing now, after he showed me this, he gets off the piano and go about his business, but he's always listening. Mm-hmm. And I'm in a corner running it, trying to, you know, break it down and run it off. So when he find out or he hear that, I kind of got the idea that I got the tune or know the tune. He said, come on, let's play now. And he started, and then we play it. Uh-huh. And then he played, and we mess around with, and he played 4 and 5, or how long you ever want to play, you know. Uh-huh. So that's how I was learning the tunes and learning his harmonic, you know, his voicing, the structure of Thelonious' tunes is different.
Sure.
You know, so. You got to learn his phrasing, how he phrased the tune, because that's what he demands. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. Swinging. You got to swing, and you got to play the compositions the way he phrased it. Mm-hmm. You know, the way it's supposed to be.
Now I notice in your interpretations that you have an improvisational style, but in that style, I still hear Monk's melodies in your improvisation. Now, is that his concept or is that?
That's my concept. That's my concept.
I still hear the melody from time to time stated in various forms.
That's my, that's my interpretation of how I approach it. Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. Where other musicians approach it another way, you know. Melodic, but I hear it the way I hear it. His melody is so strong that I hear things off his melody. Yeah. So it's always running into my, into my head all the time.
well, I guess we could spend most time talking about Monk, but I'd like to move on now to things that after Monk. I'm sure there's some very interesting things happened. I read somewhere where you didn't play for a couple of years.
Yeah, after I left Thelonious, I didn't play for a couple of years, yeah.
Was that intentional, that you just wanted to cool
out? I wanted to cool out. I didn't want it to get in with no other band. I just wanted to cool out and collect and get my thing together.
Right, right.
Because I was more into trying to get my thing together then, because I had been with Thelonious for 10 years.
Mm-hmm, you know? Did you, at that time, think about other bands such as Sphere that evolved later on?
No. But that's when I got with Callow.
Mm-hmm.
We start rehearsing together, cause I always been interested in different instruments, like not the regular trumpet and tenor, or trombone and tenor and alto.
Mm.
I like to hear like the French horn. When Julius and I got together, that was a beautiful bit.
Mm.
So when Callow. I heard Callow and I knew that how he played and how I could relate to that.
Mm-hmm.
And his improvisation, it was lend closely to the tenor. So when we got together, we did the same thing like when Julius and I got together. We rehearsed just the two of us to create a sound.
Mm.
And then we add the rhythm section, you know.
Well, now in a lot of your groups, you were co-leaders. In other words,
with Callow and with Julius.
Uh-huh. And with Sphere, it's sort of
it's a core of the whole four of us is a core.
Uh-huh. Now, do you prefer being co-leader to being leader?
No, but I don't know. I just got into. I imagine it was the thing when in a co-op group. In order to keep like a band, if you're the leader of the band, you got to work in order to keep the musicians.
Mm-hmm.
And you can be a leader and say Charlie Ross in his group or whoever in his group. But every time maybe you keep a group for about a year, and then every time then there start being changes,
right?
Because you can't work.
Mm-hmm.
You got to continuously work in order to keep a band.
Sure.
So when you co-op a band, it means that everybody has a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody has their own, well, say, you know, they, whenever, the conception of, for me, of co-op is when you have a band, it's hard to have a band, like to keep a band. When Duke Ellington and, like Jimmy Lunsford, when they have a band, they had bands and musicians stay with them for 5 and 6 and 7 years,
sure.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
But economic conditions don't call for that.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to keep a band like that together, that every time you hear of a band, Sphere or the Grandmother, you know that's four musicians and you know that they are there.
Mm-hmm.
And so when that band stay together, when four musicians stay together and play like that, things start happening after a certain length of time. Everybody feels each other, know where each other, what each other is doing, and the music starts spreading out. You get loose, and it's magic start happening with that.
Right.
But when you have different musicians running in transit,
okay,
everything sounds. Some nights it sound good, and some nights it don't.
Mm-hmm.
So when with co-leader with Julius and myself, and Callow and myself is. And Thelonious and myself, because maybe the idea of Thelonious, because there were a time, the last four years I was with Thelonious, it was just Thelonious and myself. See, and then they were getting rhythm sections like bass and drums from wherever we went.
Mm.
But you heard the sound.
Right, right.
You did.
And the sound was there.
Yeah, right. Maybe the rhythm was kind of off, whatever, but the sound was there.
So you're saying that the last 2 or 3,
about 3 years, uh-huh. I was with the Noise. It was like
just
that.
Just the two of you, and you all travel all over the world.
All,
I guess.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
When we want to go to Europe or something, we automatically say, well, the manager or whoever get a bass player and the drums.
Mm.
We don't need. You don't even rehearse. And we go because the lawyers know that when we on the stage. He can go right in and I can go right in. The only thing the bass and drums do is just keep the time.
Right.
Sometimes they wasn't sure of themselves, but you know.
But yeah, I guess that's the interesting thing, getting back to conclude and summarize, it's the sound and the interpretation that's important.
To me now, yeah. Maybe other musicians is different, but to me, that's I think that's very important.
The way it's worked out, I think that's why you're distinctive, and that's why we looked at your oral history. We have interviewed today Charlie Rouse as a part of the Howard University Jazz Oral History Project, and this has also included Mr. Mark Batson as a pianist who is a student in the music department, and we'd like to thank Charlie and Mark for your participation.
Very welcome. I really enjoyed it.